Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about realities of selecting residence and domicile to relocate and save income tax. And who better to lead us with that than two tax attorneys? Dave DeJong, principal in Stein, Sperling, Bennett, DeJong. Then I'll stop. I think there's some others after that. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Bob.
Dave and I have known each other for an awfully long time. We worked together in the 70s, and Dave is a tax whiz kid, as is Eric Rollinger.
Correct.
Did I do that right?
You did.
And Eric is an associate with the same firm, and Eric joins us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
And so let's start it off. Dave, is there a tax advantage for a retiree to move to a state like Florida? You know, we're on the East Coast here, so we talk about Florida, but I suppose it could be the West Coast to go to Nevada or Washington State. But let's talk about Florida.
Yeah, Nevada is a good one if you want to stay on the West Coast. But talking about Florida, there are reasons why people retire to Florida other than the weather. Florida is one of those states with no income tax and no estate taxes. It's very expensive, particularly in the mid-Atlantic states, to not only live in one of them with income tax rates approaching 10%, it's also expensive to die in a number of states, particularly in the mid-Atlantic and going north toward New England.
Really? And how about, let me ask you this. Florida, is there better bankruptcy protection? I know this is way off the subject, but I understand if you're in trouble, you want to move to Florida.
Florida is one of those states that has a so-called homestead exemption, so that if you file for bankruptcy and you have become a resident and domicile in Florida, your house is protected from creditors, even if it's in an individual name and not jointly held where only one spouse is filing for bankruptcy.
Wow. Okay, let's get back to income tax. Eric, are there other states other than Florida, Nevada, and Washington State?
Yes, there are.
They don't have income taxes, sorry.
Yes, exactly. There are seven states with no income tax in any capacity. You already named Florida, Nevada, and Washington. Your other ones are Texas, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Alaska. Another two states you oftentimes hear which do tax dividends and interest are Tennessee and New Hampshire.
Right. And Alaska, when we teach a class, we talk about the different states, and people say, well, what's the best state to retire in? I said, Alaska. No income tax, no sales tax, and they pay you to live there.
Exactly.
And then they go, well, what's the second best? And I said, well, we got a lot to talk about then, but the best is pretty simple. But we don't see a mass migration of retirees to Alaska. I wonder why. All righty, Dave. No state death taxes. Are there other states other than?
Yeah, most states, Bob, have abolished their death taxes in recent years. In our mid-Atlantic region, Virginia, about a decade ago, got rid of death taxes. The District of Columbia has an estate tax on estates of more than $1 million. Maryland actually has two different types of death taxes, an inheritance tax and an estate tax. The estate tax applies to all estates in excess of $1 million. And like the federal estate tax, it kicks in normally only at the time of the second death, because you can transfer an unlimited amount to your spouse. And only rarely, as part of strategic planning, would you pay a death tax at the time of the first death. Maryland also has an inheritance tax that kicks in on all but the smallest estates, and it applies to amounts that you leave to friends or relatives that are not so close, such as nieces and nephews. And it is a 10% inheritance tax if you are subject to both inheritance tax and estate taxes. You get a credit against the estate tax for what's paid in the way of an inheritance tax. And Bob, what is interesting is that an inheritance tax is a tax on the right to receive, and an estate tax is a tax on the right to transfer. So they are slightly different, and you hear commentators often refer to federal inheritance tax, but the federal tax is an estate tax. The state death tax may be either. Maryland and New Jersey are the only two states that have both, and another 17 states, I believe, have one or the other.
Okay, let me make sure I understand this. If somebody was to pass, they would leave behind their assets equal to X dollars. Is that what's considered an estate?
For estate tax purposes, your state estate is similar to federal. It's everything that you have an interest in, including jointly held property, a fractional interest. It includes retirement plans and insurance. For inheritance tax purposes, there are a number of exemptions. In Maryland, most particularly, life insurance paid directly to a beneficiary. Anyone, Bob, who resides or is domiciled in a particular state should be aware of state death taxes if they are in one of those jurisdictions that imposes such a tax.
Okay, and that same concept of an estate would then be mirrored by the state. But an inheritance isn't necessarily an estate. If we inherit something from Uncle Harry or Aunt Nellie, is that subject to an inheritance tax in Maryland?
It is if it is left to a non-relative or to someone who doesn't fall within the definition under the law of a close relative. It is typically paid by the estate, even though it's a tax on the right to receive.
Okay. And like you say, if it is paid, it would reduce the state estate tax. So it wouldn't be a double tax.
That's correct.
Okay. Are any of the other two locals, or can you recall any other states? It's not fair to ask you that throughout the country, but Maryland has it, but does D.C. and Virginia have this kind of?
D.C. and Virginia do not have an inheritance tax, and Virginia does not have an estate tax either. Of the three local jurisdictions in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, from a death tax point of view, the one that you want to live in is in Virginia, and more than once I've counseled clients with significant estates who live in Maryland and in D.C. that upon the death of their spouse, or if they're divorced or widowed, to consider moving to Northern Virginia to save potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars in estate taxes.
Okay, so how long would I have to be there before I could have this protective shield?
You have to be domiciled in the state, and that really opens up a lot of areas for discussion. Domicile is state of mind. What do you consider to be your home. It is subjective, but you must have a rational basis, and it must be backed up by some objective criteria.
And to elaborate on that, some of the objective criteria you should do is register to vote in the new state, set up checking and savings accounts in the new state, if that state is Florida for income tax planning purposes, death tax purposes, that's what you'd want to do. Other things that are oftentimes done are you'll change your driver's license, you'll change your licenses on your cars, you'll get a country club membership. It's very subjective in the mind of the Department of Taxation for that state whether or not they're going to try to say you are a resident or a domiciliary resident of the new state, because it's the old state that's going to want to say, no, we still think you're subject to tax here in D.C., Virginia, or Maryland.
Are you from the Midwest?
I am.
How did I know that? I really didn't know it. I just picked up some words. So we can't do all the states, but we could do the Midwest, I suppose, on another show. But I know there are a lot of people outside the Beltway listening to this show. But the concept, I don't think, is any different. The laws are different.
Exactly.
Correct me if I'm wrong, counsel.
And to give you an example, I'm originally from Wisconsin. I practiced there for 3 years before coming to the D.C. metropolitan area. And just like here in this area, people in Wisconsin are moving to, say, Wyoming or to other places where there are no taxes or no income taxes on personal individual income. It's something that people do, especially when they retire, to avoid those sources of income coming in later and being taxed.
Yeah, and as we talk in class, income tax is very important. But it is in the top three, maybe four, of the reasons you would change your domicile. But it's not number one, unless you're really driven by taxes, which a few people are. So, I mean, health issues ought to be there. And you know, do you like social this, that, or another thing? But when we talk in class, I'm moving to Florida. Why? Because they don't have taxes. And I said, well, where in Florida? I don't know. Anywhere in Florida. Well, you might want to watch out for Hurricane Alley, or if there is a Hurricane Alley. And you might want to be around other people. You might want to be around hospitals just in case.
And it's interesting that you mention that, because one of the factors that your former state will oftentimes look at is, do you have family in the state you're now declaring as your new domicile, the place where you say you intend to stay or you intend to be your permanent residence? And Florida's the great example. So many people say, yeah, now I'm a Florida domiciliar, but in reality, they still have their house in their former state. All their family is still in the former state. It becomes a real interesting test.
We get that question a lot in class, so why don't we just drill into that? What is the difference between residence and domicile?
And it's something that Dave might have touched on briefly, but domicile is where you intend to make your permanent residence. And it's really an interesting test where you do have family in the old state that you have allegedly left to make your new state of domicile. But it is a state of mind where you intend your permanent place of abode to be.
Now, in order to establish paying taxes in a non-taxing state, you have to change both your domicile and your residence. A lot of people use the terms interchangeably, but as we said, domicile is where you're for an indefinite period of time. Residence is where you spend 183 days per year, half the year, or slightly over half the year. I guess leap years, you got to do an extra day. But it's an objective test, and it ignores temporary absences, so that if you divide the year, you head down to Florida on the 1st of November and you come back on the 5th of May, you're slightly over half the year in Florida, even though you keep a home in Maryland or Virginia or wherever. In a taxing state, you would typically ignore If you were in Florida and you went to the Bahamas for a week, that would count as a Florida day. So those people who, after they move to Florida at retirement, keep a home in a taxing state need to count their days very, very carefully, and the rules will vary slightly from state to state. But in general, ignoring temporary absences, you must spend 183 days in Florida to establish residence, and you must have the requisite intent that Florida be your primary home going forward.
And Claire's, when I get, and I've made a similar response, and you go, well, how do I know? And I said, keep a calendar next to your bed, and each morning when you wake up, write down what state you wake up in. And at the end of the year, count the days up.
Well, that's not entirely
I know
going to be correct, Bob.
I know.
Because taxing states consider that if you spend any portion of the day in that state, that it counts as a day. And I've had clients fly to Florida who have homes in Maryland. They fly from Florida for a meeting up here, and I tell them, meet in Virginia or D.C. Do not go to your home in Maryland if it's going to be a close call on the 183 days.
And even the definition of day varies amongst the states. In Virginia, it is any part of a day unless you're leaving for that day, in which case then they won't count it. Whereas in Maryland, they say if you have 24 hours, it's less than 24 hours. Even if you were a Monday and a Tuesday in the state, they'll still only count it as one day because it was under 24 hours. Virginia doesn't have that rule. Only if you're commuting through the state, like I was just saying, which you didn't really stay there at all, will they let you off the hook and say, okay, that's not a day.
Interesting you all say that, and I'm sure you know this, but I went through a four-year audit with a New York auditor, clearly a Florida resident, just as clear as I thought it could be, and their position was, unless you can prove that you were here, you were not here, you're a New York resident. And we started off with a huge balance due and finally ended up for a fraction of it because it just didn't make sense.
Some states are pretty aggressive. Mm-hmm. New York is one of those, Maryland and Virginia as well. Just to illustrate how aggressive New York is, I had a client of mine some years ago who had not registered to do business in New York, got nabbed because they use college students on the streets of Manhattan to look for out-of-state trucks to see what companies might be doing business in the state. My client went and painted his trucks white after that. But just to illustrate, some states are particularly aggressive. The burden is going to be on the taxpayer to show that they have established residence for a majority of the year outside of the taxing jurisdiction. And the best way to prove it is your calendar, hard copy, or computer. Another way of proving it is your credit cards, particularly if you use a single primary card. You can look and see where the charges are. And another method is your backup cell phone data, which you don't get every month, but the cellular companies track the origin of your calls. And you can use that to help you. And in some cases, it's in fact going to hurt you.
Yeah.
You also mentioned New York. Virginia has the same standard. The presumption.
I didn't know that.
The burden is yours to prove the days, and they make the assumption that if we don't know what a day is, it's Virginia.
You know what? When I was talking with the auditor, I got a really tough auditor, but then I got friendly with the supervisor who was reasonable. And I said, isn't there some doctrine called innocent until proven guilty? And they go, no, not here for this purpose. So I go, okay. And I knew I was in a battle, but it ended nicely. So, Eric, when somebody wants to move from a state, a local state here or outside the Beltway, and they want to move to one of these third states, how do they kind of account so that if they ever were a question, because some of our listening audience, for example, when they retire, they have accumulated leave that they can take, and it can be substantial. And that leave is never paid until at least 2 or 3 or 4 weeks after they retire. So that if they were to move from a state that has a high tax to a state that has no tax, they want to do it sooner rather than later. So what should they do to protect themselves if ever questioned?
The first thing you will want to do, well, maybe not the first thing, but the most important thing you'll want to do is come the end of the year, you'll want to file a part-year resident return for your former state. If that's one of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area states of Maryland, Virginia, or the district, there's only one part-year actual form, and that's Virginia. They have 760-PY. For D.C. and for Maryland, you actually file the normal form, which for those in this area know that's a 502 or a D-40, and you have to actually check a box or put a P in a box for Maryland to say, I'm a part-year resident now, put the state on notice, say the date that you left or that you're claiming that you left, and then you at least have allowed the state to have something that they can see on a federal return to know that, on a state return, that this is the last day I was here and I have filed a return under penalties of perjury signing it that this is the date. And that at least will get you started for the day that you officially leave.
And that kind of leads to an interesting point. Often your federal workers may have spouses who are outside the public sector, and they may be wanting to sell their business as part of their pre-retirement steps, or they may be receiving some deferred compensation. If you establish residence and domicile in Florida prior to a stock sale, and this could be the case of a large sale of publicly traded stock as well as a sale in your own corporation, you will avoid the liability in the taxing state. That's true with some types of deferred compensation as well. But note that if you file a return and you back out the non-Maryland part of the year, for example, and you're backing out a large amount of money, the state is going to pick up on it and audit. So I prefer, if my client are anticipating a lot of money coming in, I like to have them change their residence and domicile at the end of the previous calendar year.
Okay.
And to just elaborate on your question, don't forget that when you move states, you're getting out of, say, interest and dividends and capital gains, like Mr. DeJong mentioned earlier. But if you earned the income from doing your normal work in that state, you wouldn't avoid paying taxes on that income. That's Maryland, Virginia, or DC sourced income that you earned working in that state. That's going to be taxable whether you're a non-resident or not. So in your example, you might not save any income taxes on wages that were earned while working in the state.
Okay, here's another one. In class, when we talk, some folks say, I really want to keep my home here, but I really am moving. Is there a disadvantage? Forget the economics of it. Is there a disadvantage to having a home here and I don't live here?
The disadvantage is that you're more likely to be scrutinized. If Florida is becoming your only home, the only issue that a state, a taxing state, could bring up is when did your residence and domicile shift? If you keep a home here, then you get into a much tougher question. Has your residence and domicile actually shifted? And on the first point, I tell people the first several years, don't cut it close on the 183 days. Do 7 or 7.5 months in Florida. They can cut it closer once they get past those first couple of years. On domicile, what isn't going to work is if you keep your million-dollar home in the Mid-Atlantic or Northeast and you buy a two-bedroom condominium in Florida at a much cheaper price, a much smaller home, you're going to be very hard-pressed to convince the taxing authorities that, in fact, you have kept your that you've transferred your domicile to Florida.
Okay. Now, going on the other coast, because you know a number of people outside the Beltway listen to this, California is a pretty aggressive state with, like New York. I'm not picking on the states, but you know there's a large concentration of the feds in California. Colorado. Colorado's got a not as steep as the others, but it's not an insignificant tax, and they're close to you know a tax haven, Nevada, somewhat. Colorado, but there are other states, Midwest, and then up north, Wyoming. I don't know if Wyoming's a tax haven, but it's a nice state, but it's cold. Anyway, so that's just a comment for those as well. I don't live around New York, or I don't live around Maryland. Well, you might live in another state that's just as tough, and that's just a comment to them.
Now, next to Florida, Nevada is the most popular state for those who choose a jurisdiction for retirement based on tax considerations. Of course, Nevada, of course, has wonderful entertainment and terrific restaurants as well.
and California.
How would you know?
and California with that top 13.3% income tax rate on people earning over $1 million is the top of any state. So you have a lot of incentive to just move across to Nevada.
Well, we probably have very few but of our listeners with that kind of income. But there's some that go off to a pretty lucrative second career, and they might be a consultant, small business, and the like. But
Bob, to continue on a point that that I made a moment ago, if you keep your home in a taxing state but buy another home elsewhere, as I mentioned, there's going to be tremendous scrutiny, and you have to go beyond just the driver's license and the voter registration. Some of the little things get looked at. Maryland asks a question on a questionnaire that might be sent to someone who has purportedly left the state's jurisdiction. And there's a question that seems innocuous, but it is perhaps the most important single question. And Maryland asks, where do you keep your souvenirs, your mementos, your photograph albums, and scrapbooks? Because people purportedly keep these in their primary home. So that should go down to Florida with everything else. And of course, other things, your bank accounts, your brokerage accounts, where you get your mail should be in Florida or in Nevada or your non-taxing jurisdiction. You should join organizations in that state, get a library card, and discontinue as much as possible your ties to organizations in the taxing state.
Can contributing to a local charity can also help in the Florida area if that's where you're going. Having your mail forwarded for 1 year with the United States Postal Service. These are all other things in addition to what Dave just mentioned that all help.
Okay, suppose I want to join the Stein Sperling Fan Club. How do I access your website and or phone numbers?
Our website is at www.steinsperling.com. T like Tom, E, I, N like Nancy, S, P like Paul, E, R, L, I, N, G. Our phone number is 301-340-2020.
All right. Now, let's go back to some of the pickier states, if you will, or tougher states. Let's call them the tougher states. And you live in one of the tougher states, but you do want to move, but you decide I want to take a vacation in another area other than the state that I'm moving to. Now, sequentially now, I want to move, but when I move, it's only after I spend a week or two in some other state other than the state of residence. What do I need? Do I need to be worried about that?
Yes. Yes, you do. Virginia is a great example. Just like you mentioned with New York, Bob, they are going to assume that unless you can prove a day is not outside the state, that it's inside the state, and temporary absences, which a vacation would be, they will oftentimes, even though it's a gray area, take the position that that doesn't count, and that we view this as Virginia days. And it's a real gray area where, depending on who you get, can really change the outcome.
And especially if there's a chunk of change that came to them within that week or two. If there isn't much, I don't want to guess. That's why you are there.
and actually, I wasn't even referring to possible wages earned. I was, granted, even though it would be an extension of where I was going, I was considering more even just, are you a resident of that state? And therefore, you're subject to your capital gains and your interest and your dividends are taxable. But you bring up another good point. If it's outside the state, in theory, and you're a resident, you still have to report the income. You just get a state tax credit if you earned it in another state and you paid it.
Right.
But that's not always a good thing, because your state tax rate may be higher than the state you were working.
Bob, keep in mind that if you move to Florida or Nevada or another non-taxing state, that if you have source income remaining from a taxing state, that income is still subject to tax, although your interest, dividends, Social Security, and government pension would typically not be subject to tax. What would be subject to tax in the taxing jurisdiction would be any positive rental income if you converted your old home to rental property, and certain types of what we call non-qualified deferred compensation remain subject to tax in the state where it was earned. Now, your employer retirement plans that are qualified, governmental, and similar, the source state under federal law may not impose a tax. But on customized one-person retirement plans that we call non-qualified deferred compensation, if they are not paid out in substantially equal payments over at least a 10-year period, they are not protected under federal law. And some states, after you move to Florida or Nevada, may seek to impose their tax on this sort of deferred compensation.
Okay, let's drill right into this, because there are a significant number of people around here that do go back and work for Uncle as a consultant. Some do extremely well, or they work for a government contractor, again, locally, and they come to you all and say, what's the best type of single employer plan? I have no employees, and we won't go through all the different plans, but some of those you can put a lot of money into.
Oh, yes. If you are from age 50 to age 60 and you've retired from the government and you are a consultant, you file on a Schedule C, that is the optimum time for creating what's known as a defined benefit plan, because you typically have no employees working for you, or if you do, you might have a single, much younger worker. And because you are within 10 years of a so-called normal retirement age, and the concept of a defined benefit plan is to have a benefit at retirement that is equal to or approaches 100% of your average compensation during the years that you worked as a consultant. So whereas in most retirement plans of private employers, you're lucky if you can put $40,000 to $50,000 away. If you are older and create a defined benefit plan, you may be able to put into six figures away in each of 10 years in a defined benefit plan.
Okay. Now, does Virginia have this type of provision? They would chase the person.
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right. I'm thinking of somebody. Anyway, I will call that person after the show. All righty. Thanks, Dave. All righty. So I suppose a state scrutinizes and is unreasonable. Like, I'm not going to say my experience with New York was unreasonable. It was until I got to the person that had dealt with it and been there, done it. The auditor has a job. I understand that. And the job is to, here you go, boss. This is what I found. And then the boss, the thing thus far is squeaky clean. There's no issues there. And then, our job as professionals is to talk to the supervisor and come to some grand compromise if we can, unless it's egregiously wrong. So what do I need to do to keep my flanks clean?
And it will vary depending on which jurisdiction you're dealing with, on what your appeals rights may be or who you may be dealing with. But in my experience, doing the things that we said earlier, just really laying out all the steps that were taken for your person to establish domicile in the new, preferably Florida, Nevada, non-taxing state jurisdiction. And I agree with what you said, Bob. At the initial level, when I have the lower level person or the younger person who's doing the initial work, that's where I get a lot of the kickback usually until you start working with a manager. And for most jurisdictions, you always have the right to work with a manager. So that's something you'll want to do and have your ducks in a row.
We have a manager on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Everything's good. And you? Thanks.
By the way, I know this may not be exactly on point, but perhaps your very knowledgeable attorneys could shed a light about the latest changes that took place in the federal state law, things like portability, amount increasing substantially, and that, all that. Take a couple of minutes.
Certainly. The federal exemption from estate taxes is now $5.25 million, and a married couple who has had proper estate planning can effectively protect $10.5 million from federal estate taxes. That really limits the application of federal death taxes to a fraction of 1% of all decedents. Now, into the estate law a couple of years ago came what is known as portability. And portability allows those who did not do proper estate planning a second chance. It gives them the ability at the time of the first death, the surviving spouse can add to his or her $5.25 million exemption, the unused exemption from the first spouse to die. It is not a substitute for proper estate planning, but it is something that will save a number of decedent estates by utilizing that technique. So in the last several years, with the $5 million index for cost of living exemption at the federal level, the focus has really shifted in some states to saving state death taxes, because most of the states that have a state estate tax have an exemption of $1 or $2 million. I believe New Jersey's is even slightly less than $1 million. So federal has become much less important than state.
Okay.
The trick is to really move into one of these states that you have so kindly mentioned. Thank you for the information.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
All righty, now we're not running out of gas, but I think we're running out of time for the next question. This is very focused on moving from one state to another, but if one moves from a state outside of the country and maintains their U.S. citizenship, what should they be cognizant of?
Bob, this has become an extremely hot topic as retirees or even those who continue to work in the private sector take jobs outside of the United States, and it's going to be even more so as we get increasingly global in the future. The best single thing you can do, which hardly anyone does, before you go overseas, establish domicile and residence first in a non-taxing state, and then go overseas. I have had a couple of clients go to Florida first before they head overseas to work. In most cases, it isn't practical. So you get to the issue, even establishing residence overseas, typically not different. You're going overseas to work. You're going to be well more than 183 days. But you have to show that you went overseas with the intent of living there indefinitely. And there are often going to be one of several strikes against you. First of all, in terms of those who work for defense contractors and are, for example, in the Middle East, a number of countries, Saudi Arabia and others, you may not become a domicile in that country if you were not born there, except under the most limited of circumstances. So some countries where American workers go to, it is impossible to establish domicile. Essentially, you must either be a dual citizen or have the foreign country's equivalent of a green card, such that it makes you a permanent resident of that country. And even then, I've had clients scrutinized if they have kept their real estate in the United States in a taxing state, even if it is rented. So when the client comes in for advanced planning, and of course, many only come in after the bomb is hit, so to speak, and there's an audit. But for those who come in for advanced planning, the ideal, all other things being equal, is to dispose of the property within the jurisdiction, or if it is rented, rented unfurnished and get rid of the tangible assets, the furniture, take it with you overseas, or put it in storage. But if you put it in storage, put it in storage outside of your former jurisdiction.
And to give you a real world example, Dave and I just recently had Maryland say someone is a Maryland resident because on their 1040, they put down the Maryland address, even though they had been in one of the foreign countries that Dave mentioned earlier, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, I forget which exact country it was, but the Maryland said, and they were even actually able to establish that they were a resident because they met one of the highly scrutinized standards, and Maryland still said, yeah, you put down this Maryland address on your 1040, therefore you should file a Maryland return.
I've got a few of those.
And that's the way the state picks up on you, is the address on your federal return, even if you don't file a part year state return. Several years ago, I had a client who retired and was going to sail the world for at least a couple of years, and they were actually domiciled in Virginia at the time of retirement. They put his brother's address on the federal tax return, which was in Maryland. Maryland picked up on it. In the end, we were able to convince Maryland that it had no right to tax, and I'm not sure Virginia ever picked up on it. Wow. But you cannot change domicile until you have clearly established it somewhere else, either in another state or in a foreign country. If you go overseas, you have to have resident status and intend to stay there on an indefinite basis.
All righty. I just want to say something here for those of you all listening and thinking, oh, these are just tax avoidance schemes. No, this is called tax planning. And if somebody's going to do X, Y, or Z, how do they do it the most efficiently to save taxes? If they don't care about saving taxes, they can just do it the most inefficient way. But sometimes when you give people tax advice and on the radio, somebody's listening and say, oh, that's just borderline tax cheating. We'd never, ever advocate cheating. It's just to make sure that you keep the most that you can.
Big difference between tax evasion and tax avoidance.
Yes.
Yes, about 3 to 5 years.
Very good. How about a two-corner billiard shot here? I'd like your example of Saudi Arabia. And knowing that, could I first move to another European country that I really want to be in, and then I go to work in Saudi Arabia?
Well, to go to the European country, you would have to show that you gave up your domicile here.
Yeah.
So you would have to be a permanent resident of, say, Monaco, for example, because that's often cited as a tax haven in Europe. And then you go to one of the countries where it is virtually impossible to establish domicile, but you clearly must have terminated it in a taxing state in the United States.
Okay.
And if you maintain your citizenship in the U.S., you're a dual citizen, you still have to file that Form 1040 with worldwide income on it. Don't forget.
Yeah.
You know, that actually leads to a point off subject that is extremely important, that if you have a foreign bank account, the IRS is acting aggressively in enforcing the FBAR, foreign bank account reporting form. There's another form that is part of your 1040 that if you have a larger account, it must be included. And the service is extremely aggressive. A lot of people have foreign bank accounts innocently. They inherited these accounts, or someone overseas put their name on it and made them an authorized signator without telling them. And there is reporting required. There is an ongoing amnesty, which makes sense to participate in certain, but not all, circumstances.
And again, for those listening, say, those are just, no. It actually, correct me if I'm wrong, y'all, that if you have more than $10,000 in any one day, you have to file that form.
Correct.
And once you file the form, I'm not saying it's opening the door to say, come on in, but could be.
Bob, there's one additional point that I'd like to make, since we've spent the better part of an hour talking about domicile, and that is the military. And in the case of someone who enters the military, their domicile stays in the jurisdiction from which they entered the service unless they make an affirmative effort to change. And about 5 years ago, this was expanded to include spouses of active duty military. So if you're going into the armed forces, you want to go in from Florida or Nevada or another non-taxing state.
And this would also, I assume, be impacted by foreign service officers. It would be impacted by this, maybe not as directly, but they do have benefits. Andrew's telling us we got 1 minute.
Well, in that case, in foreign service officers, the general rule, like the military for federal taxes, in getting that $250,000, $500,000 exclusion on disposition of a principal residence, military foreign service get extra time, and some states apply the military rule to foreign service on domiciliaries.
Okay. Questions after this? Give us an email at 4FOR, your benefit at NITPINC.com. And the Steinsperling is?
www.steinsperling.com, 301-340-2020 for Eric Rollinger or me, Dave DeJong.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks
for listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.